This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Which of the four top seeds in the 2019 NCAA tournament bracket will be the first to drop out, to trip and fall flat on its face, to break a heel on the dance floor, and be kicked out of the competition? We've got the poll up. In fact, I'll retweet now, but A-Law Radio or After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. And while you're there, join the After Hours Bracket Challenge. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's our big blowout that we always do following Selection Sunday. And we're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. If you miss any of our interviews, like Gonzaga sophomore forward Corey Kispert, who joined us earlier in the show from Spokane. And then in our final hour, we'll have a chance to talk to Liberty Flames head coach Richie McKay, the 12 seed for Liberty out of the Atlantic Sun. So that's coming up next hour. Or our guest here in studio that you'll hear from momentarily. Everything will be part of our podcast, After Hours, AmyLawrence.com, and that's updated every weekday morning. It is always fun to have a blank bracket in front of you. We have a blank bracket. But guys like Jerry Palm, CBS Sports bracketologist, has been fooling around with brackets for months because that's his job. So it's always fun to do our annual visit with Jerry once we get through Selection Sunday. And Jerry, the first question I always ask you, thanks so much for being here. The first question I always want to know is, how does your final bracket look?
Well, I missed one team. I missed Belmont.
You missed one out of 68?
Yes, I missed Belmont. I had TCU instead. And there was a case for Belmont, but all of the teams that, as it worked out, all of the teams that I left out all had something significantly negative about them that normally would be a deal breaker for the committee. And for Belmont, it was strength of schedule and a couple of bad losses to go along with it. And I had TCU in because while they had negatives, they didn't have anything that would normally be something like that. But, you know, TCU could just have easily been left out, and they were, and they have only themselves to blame because they didn't get the kinds of wins that they needed to get to impress the committee. And that's, you know, it's a tough job at the bottom of that bracket. The first team that the committee left out was North Carolina Greensboro. And that was actually the team I took out of my bracket when Oregon won last night or on Saturday night.
Bracket buster for sure.
Yes, yeah.
Did you happen to see the statement from the NC State ADWL?
No, I didn't.
But so she points to net and talks about how there's supposed to be this new category that really, I guess, defines the quad one and quad two wins,
right,
and that North Carolina State was 8-9 in games against those types. Right. So she puts out this whole statement.
Yeah.
How far out was the Wolfpack?
At least four. Because they gave us the four that were the first four out because those teams become the top seeds in the NIT. And it was TCU and Greensboro and Indiana. I forget the fourth off the top of my head, but it was NC State was not part of that either. So it was they were beyond
Alabama.
That level of out. Oh, thank you. Yes, Alabama. So, yeah, they were beyond that level of out. And, you know, NC State had the classic NIT resume. They had the worst non-conference schedule in all of Division I.
Well,
I mean, 353 out of 353. You almost have to try to have a non-conference schedule that bad. And they played Auburn and Wisconsin. So it's not like they played nobody, but they went out and they got the worst teams money could buy and played them, and they end up, and teams get left out for this almost every year. And it is the most consistent indicator for a bubble team to get left out is a poor non-conference schedule. But usually it's like 271 or, yeah, I mean, they're almost 100 points lower than, or spots lower than that in that ranking. Their overall strength of schedule was 183 for a major conference team in the last, well, since they changed the RPI formula in 2006, the worst major conference team strength of schedule was Purdue in 2008. They were 108. NC State was 183. You have to beat the Dukes and the Carolinas of the world if you are going to erase that stain on your resume. And you can, but you have to be way into the bracket. If you're around the cut line, you're way gone. And that's what happened to them. And if they didn't know it, they aren't paying attention because it happens all the time.
It's our annual Selection Sunday visit with Jerry Palm. CBS Sports spent, the last 11 days doing CBS Sports HQ and Big CBS, and now the brackets are done. How are you feeling? Are you exhausted?
Yeah, it's tiring. 11 days away from home is long. I haven't been that long away from home since a two-week vacation in Europe that would have preceded children.
This is not the same.
So, to say the least, and my oldest is 21, so we're talking almost 25 years since I've been gone from home this long. And I had to pack a lot of dress clothes that I didn't really need in Europe, and I had to do laundry here.
Okay, that is how you know that you've been away from home for too long. So the bracket is now done. It's out, and I'm interested to know how you believe this new formula, they call it the net, impacted the bracket, if at all.
Well, they said that they were going to use the net the same way they use the RPI, which is to define the quadrants being essentially the quality of your game. So quadrant one is your toughest game. There's a home and road aspect to it and the rankings. And then quadrants two, three, and four. And so that's what Kay Yao was talking about, the new net for the quadrants. Well, North Carolina State would have been 95th in the RPI if they were still using it. You're not even getting looked at 95. They were 33 in the net. And the biggest difference between the net and the RPI is margin of victory. That net has an uncapped margin of victory. It's the second most important component. So North Carolina State plays a bunch of lousy teams, but they beat the snot out of them. They won by an average of 25 points a game against those teams. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of mitigate a bad schedule that way. But the committee's not going to be fooled. They're going to see 8, 9, 10 teams at the bottom of quadrant four, not just in quadrant four, but among the worst teams in quadrant four on your resume, and it becomes obvious. But the net alone, just like the RPI alone, does not get you in or out. It doesn't get you seated. We had three major conference schools in the top 40 of the net not get in the tournament: NC State, Clemson, and Texas. Texas was 16-16. I mean, that's bowl eligible, but it's not tournament eligible, and Clemson was 1-10, I think, 1-9, 1-10 against quadrant ones, and that's usually not good enough. And NC State had the strength of schedule, and so those things eliminated them. But if you go back to 2006, when they changed the RPI formula to include home and road, the worst major conference ranking for a team left out was, or the best, I should say, was Cincinnati at 40. And so we already have had three major conference schools left out in the new net era with better rankings than that.
How much jostling was there among the ones and the twos over the last week and a half?
Quite a bit, really. I mean, it was going into championship weeks, Virginia and Carolina and Kentucky and Gonzaga were ones, and then Gonzaga loses.
So this is pre-Zion coming back to Duke.
Yeah, and it's before Gonzaga's tournament, so even the week before.
Got it.
And then Zion comes back. The Duke wins the ACC. They're so much better with him that they end up jumping all the way to the top. Kentucky loses in the SEC tournament. Carolina
semis,
does
right.
too, but they still, a 1-point loss or 2-point loss to Duke, and they're right there, still on the top line. Virginia loses, but they were so far ahead that they were still going to be a one. So now you've got three ACC teams in Gonzaga, and had Tennessee won today, we were told by the committee that they would have taken Gonzaga's spot. So we would have had even more movement had Tennessee won today.
Interesting. I thought that this was something that the chair, Bernard Muir, pointed out that fascinated me. A third of the conferences, so he said 11 of the 32 conferences in Division One ended up with multiple teams in the field, which is more than what they normally had.
Yes, that would be true. Part of that is due to tournament upsets, like in the Atlantic 10. Had VCU won the tournament, it would have been a one big league, but that didn't happen. Oregon ended up taking a bid from the back. Now, that was going to be a multi-bid league anyway. Belmont and Murray State, both from the Ohio Valley, in the tournament this year. So, it does seem to be a relatively high number of multiple bid conferences. And it's partly just because it worked out that way, and it's partly because you're starting to see maybe a little disbursement in the quality.
Jerry Palm with us in studio from CBS Sports and our bracketologist. And all these questions you're answering without even looking at your bracket. So that's kind of fun. Anything? I know I saw this question asked of you on TV. And you said, it's my job not to be surprised.
That's pretty much true.
I know. But maybe one thing that you didn't agree with the committee.
Well, I'm really picking nits, but I thought they were a little harsh with Cincinnati on their seed. They were a 7 seed. I thought they could have been a couple lines higher, especially after winning the American Conference Championship. And one of the myths of selections Sunday is that the committee doesn't take the Sunday games into account. But they definitely were. I mean, Tennessee was jumping if they had won. I mean, Michigan State moved up because they had won. I mean, they had 12 brackets to account for different possibilities for these
six
games.
And I thought you did a lot of brackets.
I do. but well, I didn't do 12 today. I just kind of went with the flow. But they had 12 ready to go and then just throw them out as the results, you know, indicate.
Wow.
But so Cincinnati, though, is a 7 seed. It felt kind of harsh, like they should have probably been higher, maybe even 2 seeds higher. However, they get to play in Columbus, Ohio. What is that, like maybe an hour and a half drive from Cincinnati? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll be close to home. I personally, if I'm a coach, I'd rather be a 7 in, you know, an hour and a half from home than a 6 two time zones away.
Yeah, no, agreed. The travel. Something else that stood out to me was the fact that Villanova, even though they're Big East champs, I know the defending champ part has nothing to do with it,
correct,
but they ended up as a 6 seed.
Yeah, well, because they had an up and down kind of year.
They did.
Just like the entire Big East. I mean, the Big East was like a 10-car NASCAR wreck, you know, and then the winner was going to be whoever had the best duct tape and spare tires, you know, could limp that thing home, and that ended up being Villanova this year. Marquette had a better non-conference performance, so they actually ended up seeded as a 5, a little bit higher, but, you know, it was at that kind of a year in the Big East. Mm-hmm. Literally, going into that conference tournament, you would think that anybody could legitimately have won that tournament. Turned out to be Villanova anyway, but... and then, of course, I'm paying special attention to Villanova now because if Purdue wins, we could get Villanova in game
Jerry
two.
Is wearing a Purdue Boilermakers sweatshirt that's, of course, his alma mater. And you were a band geek.
I was.
And I say that with all the affection.
I actually still am a band
geek.
I'm just a much out-of-practice band geek.
Do you get a relief when this part at least is over?
Yeah, a little
Selection
bit.
Selection Sunday
yeah,
is done.
You know, the hard grind for me is over, and I get to really enjoy the tournament. And even though I go out on the road, like I will be in Columbus for the first and second rounds, mm-hmm. And then in Minnesota for the Final Four, that's not the grind that everything else is. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not answering the same questions over and over. And
I'm sorry.
No, it's not you. I'm just saying that you know, and I'm not getting calls from coaches, and I'm not getting that kind of. It's like 24/7, I'm taking naps instead of sleeping kind of schedule. You know, I can have there's some more normalcy in my life at that time. And then, you know, once the Final Four is over, then it's like running into a wall. It's like disorienting because then the phone completely stops. And
I'll call you, Jerry. You don't feel completely disoriented.
That's when I get to do my taxes and then finally take a nap.
Woo! At JP Palm CBS. Always nice to have you in studio. It's our annual treat. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's good to be here. Always good to be here.
I can't even fathom putting together a bracket in which you only have one team that's missing. But that's Jerry. And he used to get upset. but not anymore. One team is perfectly within the margin for error. So that's cool. We always enjoy having Jerry here in studio. But he has to go catch a plane. Bye, Jerry. All right, so you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you joined the After Hours Bracket Challenge, fine, procrastinate. But if you miss the window, it's not my fault. 855-212-4227. Thanks so much for tuning in. Happy Monday morning to you if you're just waking up. CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
He calls for a clear out. He does drive it, gets inside the lane, then passes out. Dunbar, catch and release. 3 is good. Auburn's heating up. Their lead is 13 with 16:22 to go. 5 to shoot. Jared Harper, long 3 on the way, and he got it. That's the dagger from 5 feet behind the arc, 84-64. That one's short by Alexander. Auburn rebounded. The final seconds tick away. 3, 2, 1, ball game. And for only the second time ever, the first time since 1985, the Auburn Tigers are SEC tournament champions.
If you let a well-coached team like Rick Barnes run their stuff and put the guys in the places that he wants to put them, you're going to get isolated. You're going to give high percentage looks. It's one of the most efficient offenses in college basketball. So we try to disrupt.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I would say that is a major staple of any Bruce Pearl basketball team. They're definitely trying to disrupt. Also a staple of Bruce Pearl this time of the year is his voice is generally going. As the head coach of Auburn, the Tigers win the SEC. Brandon Gowden with the call on the Westwood One Radio Network. And if you think about the dominoes that toppled, so Tennessee, the opponent there in the SEC title game, well, the Volunteers had upset Kentucky, which, as we now know, knocked Kentucky back to a 2 seed, and Tennessee still had the chance to be on that top line. If they had beaten Auburn, the Volunteers would have had a 1 seed, according to Selection Committee Chair Bernard Muir. You'll hear more from him coming up in 15 minutes after hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227 is our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. If you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, you can get it all at geico.com. Let's talk to George, who's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. George, welcome to After Hours.
Thank you, Amy. I graduated from Penn State, but I like Villanova basketball.
Okay. Yeah, it's fun to root for them.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Marquette lost 4 of their last 5 games, and Villanova won the tournament, and they're still getting a 6th seed. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it was about the up-and-down season that they had. And you know, since you're a fan, they really were up, and then they were down, and then they were up, and then they were down. And so they have some bad losses to go along with their Big East championship. But overall, the conference itself was down as well, which also contributed to the champs having a lower seed.
Yeah, now they got to play St. Mary's, and that's going to be a dogfight game. I know it is.
Yeah, no, for sure. Coming out of the West and having beaten Gonzaga to win that conference. So, the one thing that I always come back to with Villanova and other teams like this who've been on the stage over and over is the amount of experience they have. And when you get into this time of the year, there's no shortcut to experience. So I'm not worried about them. I think that it's all about how you're playing this time of the year, and to have won 5 of their last 6, including a victory over Marquette and including, of course, the championship in the Big East. That's huge for them. And Jay Wright definitely knows how to coach on the stage. He knows how to get the most out of his guys.
Yeah, they barely won a lot of those games, and they got a lot of rebounds, and like, mm-hmm. They don't shoot a high percentage, but they do get rebounds and stuff. They hustle and, you know.
Yes. Agreed. I mean, they play hard, and sometimes the hustle and the heart can make up for the shots that aren't dropping or the talent that's not there. Again, I'm not at all worried about the Wildcats. Of course, it's a tougher road when you are a 6th seed, and potentially looming could be Purdue if they get by St. Mary's. So it's not going to be an easy road by any stretch of the imagination.
That's who they're playing, though. That's the mm-hmm. issue right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. All right, George. I think great that they have a chance to dance again. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Let's talk to Red in Georgia. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Amy.
You're welcome.
Amy, I like this NCAA tournament better than I like any in the past 10, 15 years because of Zion Williamson alone. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of 1988 when Danny Manning went on his historic run in his conference tournament, and then he pushed it on into the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And it speaks a lot about Zion, what's been going on with him here lately. When you would think, as most experts would tell Zion, to sit out for the rest of the year and get ready for the NBA. And the young man, I raise this tribute to the people that he got behind him, decided to play with his teammates. And I think this is going to be a great storyline for the NCAA. And I'm looking forward to see how far this young man can take his teammate, put him on his back, because he's showing a great showing. And if you can remember how Danny Manning did, and this is pretty close to it.
I don't, but I do know that it's the stuff that legends are made of, his run with Kansas for sure. As for Zion, I would say if you listen to him talk and you, you're familiar with his game, then you know that he does what he wants to do. And when it comes to the Duke experience and college basketball, nobody was going to tell him not to go to school or to sit out and preserve his health, so to speak, for the NBA. He was chomping at the bit to come back, and he got what he wanted. He wanted the full Duke experience, and that included UNC. So I was really happy that he finally had his UNC game in the semifinals on Friday night. That was one heck of a tug of war.
And then, Amon, one thing I noticed about Zion within the game of playing, he's very coachable. He's very he's not like most players that you would see. He's willing to – he get frustrated at times, but I think this probably is an easy coaching job for Mike Krzyzewski comparing to what he have to deal with just a lot of freshmen to coach compared to what Calipari I've done with in the past.
Mm. I mean, I think that Coach K has adapted very well. Certainly not his choice to have a lot of freshmen in the starting lineup and to have the one-and-done phenomenon. However, it's a tribute to him that not only can he communicate with young people. Remember, he's been a coach for Team USA. Kobe Bryant swears by him. But these young men continue to want to go to Duke because, A, the experience. B, you know that if you have NBA hopes, you're prepared at the highest level. And also the fact that this guy continues to be relatable and to adapt and to be flexible. He now has these young men that he has to be far more patient with. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Zion is more coachable, less coachable. He certainly has the type of body that you can't teach. I mean, it just size, it is not something that you learn. It's not something that you acquire. It's just a gift. And Zion Williamson has that. And boy, does he have a great attitude. And I would agree that it's wonderful for college basketball that he's going to be on the sport's biggest stage and that he's healthy enough to be out there too. So coming back just in time for the ACC tournament and helping Duke to get back to the one line, but not just a one seed, the one seed, the overall number one in the East region. And I really thought it was fascinating what Jerry Palm had to say about picking your region ahead of time. So every school gets to pick its region before the season even tips off, just in case they end up as the overall number one seed, or, you know, just based on your choices, your geography, kind of how your seeds play out. So Duke is sitting pretty, to be sure, but it was dicey until Zion returned and they were able to win the ACC championship. Have you filled out your bracket yet? I have not. I won't probably until Wednesday night. Although I promise to have it done by Wednesday so that I can share with you my final four and you can laugh. In the meantime, you can find our poll on Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. Who's the number one seed that exits first?
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We now have the bracket in hand. Some of you have printed two or three, I'm sure, or maybe more. I always print out multiple copies because I don't like to write in pencil. So if I mess up, I have to start all over again. Or if I'm waffling back and forth, I have to start all over again. And then I have one where I fill out the actual winners. So my bracket, my second bracket, and then the winner's bracket. And they generally look nothing alike. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy Manic Monday to you. Following Selection Sunday, the committee chair, Bernard Muir, the Stanford athletic director, sat down, of course, with the guys at CBS to talk about some of the major tenets of this bracket. And you'd have to not know anything about college basketball at all, which is okay if you don't. To not notice that three of the top four seeds come from the ACC. And remember, we know there was plenty of jostling among the ones and the twos even up until the last conference championships were done.
You know, they earn their right to be there, and certainly with Duke and Zion back, phenomenal run here in the ACC tournament, and we thought both Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina were deserving on that one line.
So you've got the Blue Devils, the Tar Heels, and the Cavaliers all out of the ACC, and Jerry Palm told us the Cavaliers were so far and away ahead of the rest of the potential ones at that point, they weren't going to lose their top line, though of course they're not the overall number one seed. That belongs to Duke now. Gonzaga ends up as the other number one from the West Coast Conference. So which of those four will exit first? We've got a poll up on Twitter, After Hours CBS or A-Law Radio. The selection process is done by a 10-member committee, and they filled out a dozen brackets on Sunday with all these contingencies. If this team wins a conference championship, if this team wins a conference championship. And so I thought it was interesting when Bernard Muir was talking about the most difficult part of this process over the last several weeks.
I think it was just those last teams in, very few spots left. And there were many teams that just, it's such a fine line that looked so much like themselves, like others. And in the end, we ended up putting in a great field, and St. John's was the last team in.
All right, so he tells you there, St. John's, the last team into the field of 68. The other three that are in that category of last four in, Belmont, Temple, Arizona State. So those were your last four in. And then the first four out, UNC Greensboro, Alabama, Indiana, and TCU. And certainly Oregon winning the Pac-12 and earning the automatic bid when the Ducks wouldn't have been in the field at all, that knocked one of those teams out. We don't know for sure which one. The TCU was a popular pick to get into the field of 68. I like what he had to say about the number of conferences that were able to land teams in the field, and not just through the automatic bids, but of course through the multiple bids and the at-large bids. It really did seem like there was more of an opportunity given to mid-majors, more of an opportunity given to the little guys, so to speak. And that's cool, because who doesn't want to see the Davids versus the Goliaths and to let them have a chance to earn their way in, because they scheduled difficult teams in the non-conference, because they played difficult games on the road. These are all things that the committee is looking at. And so if you're talking about balance, if what you want is to have the mid-majors represented and to have as many conferences out there, not just get their one team in, but to have other teams considered, this is definitely the field for you.
This year we had 11 conferences, a third of the overall 32 conferences that we have in Division One that had multiple teams in the bracket.
Right,
and
right.
And they were deserving, and we thought they belonged there. This was a high year for us. I think last 3 years it was nine conferences that had multiple teams.
So 11 of the 32 conferences land multiple teams, and of course every conference gets at least one. That's a third of the conferences that see another one of their members into the field, which strengthens the sport overall. Again, it's the balance and it's the opportunity, and it raises the bar in March Madness. Well, raises the bar going back to recruiting and then putting the teams together and scheduling the non-conference and making sure that you have a resume that will get considered by the selection committee. Here are the teams by conference, or the field by conference, I should say. The Big Ten landed the most teams into the tournament with 8. The ACC and the SEC each have 7. The Big 12 has 6. The American Athletic Conference and the Big East land 4 teams each. And the Pac-12 finishes with 3 teams. Again, Oregon ended up being a bracket buster and winning that conference tournament. Likely would have just been a 2-team league. And then there's a bunch of them that are landed 2 teams in, obviously. And then you have all the auto bids. So it was kind of crazy over the last week and a half. Really the last week in terms of the conference championships. But to know all the motion and how fluid it was. And now we end up with these first 4 games in Dayton on Tuesday and Wednesday. So you've got four 16 seeds and four 11 seeds. So again, the last four in all have to play through Dayton, but it's not a bad thing. Dayton can be, especially for a team that has a resume that's included some, you know, some bad losses, or that has a young group of guys that maybe haven't played on this stage before, Dayton can be a huge boost to them. And very often, in fact, I'm pretty confident in this, that every year since they established the first four, a team from Dayton has also won in the next round. And so it's potentially a chance for a team to find some momentum, some rhythm, and you know, to maybe turn their ship around, so to speak, if they ended up in Dayton, maybe thinking they had higher hopes and they might find themselves at a higher seed, and instead they have to play through Dayton. But it's also a great chance for these 16 seeds to win a game. I mean, these count as tournament wins. They go on your school resume as tournament wins. They're great recruiting tools because they're nationally televised games. I think they're on True TV, actually, which reminds me, I just changed my cable package and I have to go figure out where True TV is. Maybe I don't have True TV. That could be a problem, I guess, but there are many apps that I could use. If you don't have TV, there are plenty of ways to watch college basketball. It's something that the NCAA and March Madness has done really well with its partners, is that they give you what feels like a dozen ways to watch these games. And so I have to find True TV. But for the 16 seeds who are otherwise facing this mammoth uphill battle, I know it happened. It did, in fact, happen that UMBC toppled Virginia, but it's happened once. And so for these 16 seeds, it's a nationally televised game. They've got the stage all to themselves. There are no other games going on at the same time. Center ring of the circus for college hoops, and they get a chance to win a game in the tournament that they might not have otherwise. So I don't mind Dayton. It feels a little odd that we have 68 teams instead of 64, but now that I've gotten used to it, I'm fine with it. And I think it can be, especially for the power conference teams that end up there. Maybe they didn't finish strong, or as I say, they were out early in their conference tournament. It can actually be a major advantage. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Sunday was the day, of course, you had a lot of different coaches who were doing interviews, and some of them I love. You may remember, if you've been listening to our show for a couple of years now, that we had Belmont head coach Rick Byrd on the show. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. But some of these guys, not only are they losing their voices because they've been yelling during conference tournament games, but also they get really emotional. They're so happy for their students. They're so happy for their kids. The NCAA tournament, of course, is the goal always when you start out. And for mid-major schools, for smaller schools, it's not as though the opportunity is there every single year. It almost feels like you have to do more than a power conference team because you don't have the chance to match up against ranked opponents, high-profile opponents, night in and night out in your conference. And so I was smiling when I was hearing Rick Byrd on Sunday talk about just how emotional he was for his team, for Belmont.
I cry every day. I cry every day. I cry at commercials. I cry. So, I don't know. It just, you know, anytime and anything happens for people that I care about,
there's crying again.
I'm going to cry about it, and can't control it, or I would. But just happy for these guys, happy for this school, for the people that support us and care about us.
Listen to the emotion in his voice. Now, this is a unique situation because Belmont is getting its first ever at-large bid into the NCAA tournament. So not having won the conference championship, they had to sit and wait. And they turn out to be one of those 11 seeds that I just talked about who end up in Dayton. And they'll take on Temple. It's, again, a first four game. And theirs happens to be on Tuesday. And the winner goes on to play Maryland in the East region. Belmont was one of the last teams in. And so imagine the stress. You know, I mean, if you have a team that's a, you know, major college basketball school, or even that only gets to celebrate a moment like this every now and then. Maybe you remember the stress of watching a selection show and not knowing. As a graduate of Syracuse, I don't know that I was stressed that they weren't going to make the tournament this year. I was pretty confident that they would, but there have been years where they've been on the bubble and they haven't gotten in, and you wait through the entire four brackets to see if they're going to be up there. And then you have that disappointment and that punch to the gut, because it's not the same. It's fun. College basketball's fun, and there is no other tournament like this. This is a perfect tournament. It's an incredible 3 weeks. Whether you love college hoops or you don't, there's something for everyone.
No crying!
Oh, no, there's plenty of crying. I remember when Syracuse won the national championship on my birthday. Oh, I cried. Believe you me, best birthday present ever. Anyway, so here are the Bruins, who don't get the automatic bid. They know they're locked in a fight and they're on the bubble. And they watch and they wait and they see their name pop up. As you hear Coach Bird say, he's been crying all week, crying for the good, crying for the bad, but now crying because of history made. Just, I absolutely love that.
Are you crying?
Anyone who tells you there's no crying in sports doesn't know anything about sports. There's crying all the time, and not just from fans. We always see athletes cry over emotional moments. Heck, we see them cry over the national anthem, for heaven's sakes. So it's just a matter of it's important to you. I tell people this, and sometimes people don't believe me, but I tell people this. I still feel the butterflies. I still get nervous every time I turn on the mic. Every single night when I sit down in this chair and I turn on the mic for the first time to start talking on a radio show that I've been hosting for years here, and a job that I've been doing for various networks and radio stations for 20 years, I still get nervous. But it's because it matters to me, because it's really important to me. It's the culmination of years and years of working hard and pouring my heart into it. And so I'm passionate about it, which means that it gets me at my core. It does the same thing to athletes and to coaches, because they poured so much of themselves into it. And also this time of the year, they're generally exhausted. And so they're more prone to emotions and to tears. But yeah, come on. Anytime you see the results, maybe you finally reach a goal or the pinnacle of a mountain after you've tried for so many years, and you know there's been failure involved, of course it takes everything you have. And that means it's emotional and it matters to you. It's a piece of you. And so I love that real men cry like Rick Bird. All right, we've got 1 hour to go. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.